It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
What a fantastic goal that is from Garby. Chance for Gabby and Edie, yes! This commands. Garby in front.
You're listening to Steve Bloomer's Washing Your Derby County podcast with an on-the-whistle midweek special following what felt like a must-win game for Paul Warne, even at this early stage of the season. The lacklustre 1-0 defeat at Shrewsbury was only Derby's first league defeat since the start of September, but in that time since, there have been too many draws, patience has been rapidly shortening, and a manager who fans have said is one-dimensional, who've said he's out of his depth and in a job that's too big for him. So how much pressure is Warne under now? I am Chris Parsons, hello, and picking the bones out of a sixth league win of the season, but only a second at home for the Rams. With me are Richard Kutcher. Hi, mate.
Hello. Relief. Relief, pure relief to be talking to you, Chris, after 3 points.
Blessed relief. And foot injuries, Anton Martin, how are you, mate?
Yeah, I'm well. Recovering from my surgery last week. Much like Paul Warne's recovering from a pretty dodgy weekend as well.
A somewhat tenuous connection, but I'll give it to you. Late doors. Let's dive straight into some five-word reviews then. Of Derby County 2, Exeter City 0, putting Derby up to 8th in the League One table. It was a job it had to be. It was the win that was needed. Rob Wilcoxon said, much better, back four solid. Elgin, exactly what we needed, boom. Nav Sidhu said, should beat a shit team. Cork Ram said, doesn't paper over the cracks. Alex Fisher said, step in the right direction. Kieran said, much better, still worn out. Worn out, not as in worn out, exhausted. Worn out as in worn out. Although they probably are worn out. DCFC Home said, what we needed Saturday, big. Ram in Sweden said, far better, need more goals. Mick Allen said, Max Bird is top class. Ashton Wright said, never play James Collins again. Tim West said, that's more like it, Warney. And a few more with the F-bomb in, basically expressing the relief that Kutch alluded to a few seconds ago. Kutch, it was the win that Warne needed to, I don't want to say buy himself some time, but that's what it felt like. And before the game, it seemed like Paul Warne did sort of respond to some of the calls that fans had been making after the Shrewsbury defeat. Like, Louis Sibley was basically in the 10 in a more attacking position. There was a lot more intensity and play through the middle. And there were goals. How much time do you feel this has bought Paul Warne in the long term?
Well, it's a hard one to say because I think it's certainly the case from, you know, what we've read and heard from, you know, fans forums and our own Discord on Twitter, but, you know, patience has worn really thin with a much, you know, bigger proportion of the fan base than it was just a few weeks ago. So I think in that side, I think he's lost a lot of goodwill over the last few weeks and months and the whole first part of his season. I'm not convinced that Klaus will be trigger happy, but we don't know yet, right? We actually have no evidence as to what David Klaus thinks is the best way to run the club, whether it's, you know, to be trigger happy like a Mel Morris or to be uber patient or somewhere in between. We don't know any of that. So we've got no idea what he's thinking. I think
apart from the fact he's given him a 4-year contract, I suppose.
Yeah, but we've seen plenty of chairmen, including Mel Morris, give out long contracts and then, you know, bin them off pretty quickly when things don't go the way he wants. I think we all assume that David Klaus is probably going to be certainly more patient than Mel Morris, and I think quite patient. But I do think you're right, Chris. I think Paul Warne is very, very much aware of some of the sentiment towards him. I think some of his post-match interviews and his pre-match presser, he made comments which very much showed that he was kind of reading and listening to what's been said about him and his squad and his coaching staff and his transfer business. So I think he's aware of all of it. I think in terms of buying him time, I don't know if it is actually at that point from David Clough's point of view. I don't think he's probably seen it as buying him time. But what I will say is if he wins the next game, every game he wins, he gets himself at least another game, you'd expect. So it's about time this team goes on a run. We've been saying it, unfortunately, too often the last month or so, but we've got plenty of winnable games coming up. We still have plenty of winnable games coming up. So we could win 3 in a row now, like, and that'd be great. And suddenly I think people would calm down a bit. So yeah, it's a really hard one to read because we've got no idea, but tonight was a slight improvement. And I thought particularly second half, it was good to see that kind of the momentum was kept and we did go and look for a second and we probably should have got a third or a fourth. Wasn't a fantastic performance, but I think it's a win that everyone needed, particularly Paul Warne.
Anton, it seemed to me like it was a bit of a tipping point game tonight, really. Like, lose tonight or even draw, and look, the disquiet would have been deafening, really. Who really knows how much people care about these things on socials and how much Warne reads into it and how much Klaus cares about it and how much Stephen Pearce reads into it and cares about it. But it seemed like a performance where the players, I don't want to say we're playing for the manager, but there seemed to be that little 10% of intensity tonight. There seemed to be just that bit more desire. Was that, in your opinion, as a result of the opposition? Because let's face it, Exeter didn't really offer a huge amount. Or was it Derby going all out and doing what they had to, knowing that a win tonight was absolutely non-negotiable?
Exeter aren't on a great run, it's safe to say, but we've faced the likes of Cheltenham and Shrewsbury in recent games and not done the same to them. So it was a step in the right direction, and it helps to get the fans on side. I mean, I agree with Kutch's sentiments around Klaus not looking likely to be trigger happy, but the more discontent comes from fans, the more likely he is to listen to those fans, because it's a tough job to get them back on side, and it already will be a tough job for Paul Warne to get them back on side. But it was certainly a step in the right direction today. The main differences were the tempo and aggression in Exeter's half. There were phases throughout the game today where we just didn't let them out. And they couldn't lay a glove on us, to be honest. And also the bravery of getting men forward. I think so often this season it's been so frustrating that we haven't pushed men forward, we haven't got men in the box, and it's almost felt like Warne's wanted to just kind of stay tight and stay in the game for the first 60-70 minutes and then try and nick something late on, which there's potentially a time and a place for that when you're playing away from home against the likes of a Bolton or a Portsmouth. But in the majority of games in League One, especially at home, we have to get on the front foot and we have to kind of put teams to the sword like we did to an extent today. I think there's still plenty of room for growth, but it's positive. So if we can look to learn from that, and I think Paul Warne's very much still learning from it. I'm still a little bit on the fence about whether Warne's the right man for the job. I think that he can turn it around. I genuinely believe that he's still learning, and if he can take some of the positives from the likes of today and the likes of Blackpool as well, which it's easy to forget, it was only 4 games ago. Fans were really kind of cooing over that performance, because it was probably our best performance this season. We saw kind of similarities tonight, and if we can lean on that and put on a bit of a run, put 3 or 4 games winning streak, as Kutch says, then fans will get on side and suddenly it's a different story.
Kutch, let's look at the goals then. We should spend ages on this, because how many times have we got to talk about goals and a home win? I genuinely not quite sure what to say and how to approach this part of the pod. But two goals, and goals which were much needed for the players involved, as well as for the manager, Nathaniel Mendes-Lang's first of the season, and Connor Washington's first at Pride Park. The first one, lovely little move, I felt, for that first goal. A nice little cushioned layoff from Fozzy, Max Bird with a pick out, and then not really the sort of strike you see that often from friend of the pod, NML. Was it a bit of an outside of the foot job? But it was overall the sort of clinical football which we've been crying out for, and which I imagine Warner's been banging his head against the wall trying to get the players to produce in training from matches. It was well worked back to front, wasn't it?
It was. I'm not sure who played the ball out originally to Fozzy, but yeah, perfectly cushioned pass into Max Bird, and he Max Bird found space in that inside left channel quite a few times, I thought, throughout the match, and was really creative when he got into that area, and he pulled that back just across perfectly, just in front of a 6-yard box, I think maybe about 8-10 yards out for Mendes-Lang. I don't think it was outside the boot. I was thinking it was more of a toe punt, straight past the goalkeeper, you know, just kind of instinctive finish, I imagine, which is sometimes the best finishes, particularly in this division. You don't want players thinking about it too much.
Nothing wrong with a toe poke.
Yeah, nothing wrong with a toe poke. And the keeper obviously has no chance because it's got good pace on it from that distance. And yeah, great to see Nathaniel Mendes-Lang get that first goal of the season. He has been really, I wouldn't even say hot and cold, mostly cold, I think, this season. I think he's just worn out, as we've covered before. He's probably getting overplayed a bit. But what was good about his performance tonight, and I think what's good about having Kane Wilson on the pitch, is Kane Wilson stays out mostly in that ride white position, and that gives Mendes-Lang the freedom to roam about a bit more. Wasn't sure exactly of what his starting position was, and I think that was quite deliberate. So he was kind of popping up in multiple places, and he can cause havoc when he gets on the ball. So yeah, really good goal, and I thought, you know, Derby certainly deserved that lead in the first half. They started brightly tonight, and they have started brightly in other home games, but the difference was they got the goal, and the goal actually came after about 10 minutes of Exeter kind of getting back into the game and it looking like it might follow a similar pattern. So yeah, it very well worked goal and very well timed goal.
The other thing to note from that goal is the number of players in the box behind Mendes-Lang, because the reason Mendes-Lang had so much space, and to an extent Bird had so much space bursting through, was the number of men we had forward. I think I counted 5 men in the box if you include Bird, but 4 men that he was aiming for. How often have we seen that this season for Derby? Like, get men in the box and you score goals. It's quite simple, really. So hopefully that's bit of a turning point, and we start to see that much more often going forward.
Got some big breaking news on SBW. I'm going to claim it's news, might be fake news, but over on the Discord, some of our patrons chewing the fat on the game, and Tom Oliver, one of our patrons, has posted that someone he sits next to grabbed a quick selfie with David Clowes outside Pride Park after the Exeter game, and his friend put it to him about Warne's future, and apparently Klaus said to him that Paul Warne is absolutely not getting sacked. He's been given time because it's a long-term rebuild project. He reiterated he's an experienced manager with a record of success at his level. Tom also does make the point, in fairness to him, that if he was going to, Klaus clearly wouldn't tell him, would he? Oh yeah, I've got his P45 right here. Yeah, he's going to be... yeah, he's gone in the morning, mate. Don't worry about it. I guess it is nice to hear that in whatever context David Clowes means it. So we'll come on to the wider discussion on the pressure on Warne and his future in the second half. But as we said, Anton, another much needed goal. Connor Washington chipping in the second half. A few minutes before that, we're tearing our hair out, weren't we? Big break on. James Collins has the freedom of Pride Park in front of him, in front of the South Stand. Barkhausen screaming for it in the right channel, but it doesn't get his head up and just P-rolls one wide of the post. We got away with one there, didn't we? Because we've been wasteful in places like that before and it's cost us. We've shot ourselves in the foot, but thankfully we sort of kept the intensity on. We created more chances and I was really pleased for Washington. I was really pleased he got that goal because he does work hard. Haven't really seen enough of him in terms of posting numbers since he scored against Burton, although he hasn't really had that many minutes. But again, also took his goal really well, I thought.
Yeah, and in fairness to not taking our chances, we did score a very much a legitimate goal with Mendes Lang's header, which was kind of somehow chalked off by the linesman. I'm not really sure what he saw there. But yeah, Collins didn't really do himself any favours tonight. I do feel like the stick he gets is a bit over the top at times, but he did struggle a bit tonight, and that should have being quite a simple ball to Barkhuizen and potentially the second goal a little bit earlier. But the goal did come, which is quite a surprise for Derby. Quite often we throw away those situations, don't we? But it was relatively comfortable in the end. And another good goal. It was more good work from Fozzy on the left-hand side. Read the play really well. Got it up to Washington. And Washington's movement was really good throughout, I thought, when he came on. He really impacted the game. He's quite intelligent the way he runs with the ball, especially in behind, and it was a really good finish. I actually thought he almost took the wrong option because there were a couple of players over to the right hand side, but he took the shot on and he clearly saw the keeper was a little bit out of position. It was a really good goal in the end. There was a bit of chat on our Discord about Washington's role in this team because he always works really hard and looks good when he's when he's on the pitch, and it feels like he could get a few more minutes, to be honest. Him and Waggy seem to link up quite well at times. I know they didn't play together tonight, but that could be a good option. Sibley, again, flattered to deceive a little bit. So I'd like to see a little bit more of Washy. Gives that extra legs and kind of stretches play and gives us the tempo, which often leads to our best moments on the pitch.
Yeah, I was saying quite early on in the season, and Chris was laughing at me, that Washy and Waggy could certainly be a thing. And we did see those two particularly connect quite a lot in the first few games of the season, combine and assist each other for goals. And I don't know if Washington's had niggles or Warren has been, I don't know, not impressed by him, because he's had not much game time at all. Like, he hasn't even come off the bench that much. I thought he would have started in particularly some more of the away games where you might want that outlook, because he is the one that he's not lightning fast, but he works hard enough and is quick enough to run the channels and hold up the ball. He's not going to get you 20 goals in the season, but I do think he's a perfectly good enough striker to be playing more minutes in this team, in this league. And he does offer you something a bit different, which creates space for other people. Waghorn's been in a pretty lean spell the last few weeks, and I do think part of that is because he hasn't had someone like a Washington type player in front of him. I'd much rather see us playing with two out and out strikers, whether that's Waghorn and Washington or Waghorn and Collins. I think my preference would be Waghorn and Washington at the moment, rather than Waghorn or one of the others with Sibley or Bird behind him in a 10. I just think you just have a bit more dimension to you. And I think, as I said before, we should be good enough in this league to dominate teams and to have two strikers up front. And Washington would be one of those for me.
Ordinarily, I like having that number 10 because I think the balance is better and it creates more angles and more space. I just don't think we have a good enough number 10 to play that system. So I think what you're saying does make sense, Kutch. As much as I'd love Sibley to get a run in that number 10 and really make it his own, I just think he's been given so many chances that it's just not working. I'm not sure he's good enough at this level. I don't really understand the clamour for him to get another run, because he just doesn't really seem to show up. I can't remember the last good performance he had in the league. So yeah, I think what Washy and Waggy is probably our best option at the moment. But when you've got the likes of Barkhuizen and Mendes Lang and Kane Wilson all putting in good shifts out wide and looking threatening, I don't think you necessarily need a 20-25 man goal striker up front. We've discussed it on the pod before, but I'd much rather have kind of several players chipping in with goals than rely on one player like David McGoldrick.
How much do you think we really learned from tonight, though, Kutch, this 2-0 win over Exeter? As you said, they're bang out of form, lost their last five in all comps. It was absolutely the game that we had to win, and we did what we had to without looking spectacular. But in the wider context of the season, like Stevenage away at the weekend is going to be the big test of whether we can really kick on. And a lot of fans have been talking about our season not really getting going. We've only won back-to-back games once this season, when we beat Fleetwood and then beat Fleetwood at home and Peterborough away in August. And since then, it's really been one step forward, two steps back. So how much do you read into this performance and how much it can really affect our chances? For the record, it's Stevenage away, then Northampton at home, then the cup game away at Crewe, then the Pizza Cup, and then Barnsley at home on November the 11th. Massive game that. Surely that'll be a huge indication of where we're at. Barnsley currently third in League One. But as I said, how much do you read into this result, Kutch, tonight in the context of the season?
I don't know if I've learned anything new really about the team tonight in particular. I think more importantly, it might have reminded some of the team that they can score a goal, they can create chances. It might have reminded Paul Warren that we can play football a bit more on the front foot and be creative while still looking pretty solid at the back. For me, this whole thing is consistency. Like apart from Blackpool away and Peterborough away in patches, I think we've said before that the Peterborough result probably flattered us on that day, but we were clinical. Apart from those games, like the level of performance has generally been poor. So you can't even say it's a purely consistency thing, because the general consistency has been bad. I think it might have reminded them that they have got performances in them and they can perform at home. For me, I've said it before, I'll say it again, the squad is good enough to be top six, and we'll come at least top six, and we'll come onto it in the second half. But for me, the longer we underperform, considering how I rate the squad, the worse that reflects on Paul Warren. So it should just remind people that there is a team there, which means either if they continue to underperform, then there will be consequences, or it means that they will come good eventually. It's just whether or not it's too late. I still think it isn't too late. I still think you can put a good run together. And like Anton, I think Warren is capable of putting a run together of this team. But for me, it just reminded people maybe a bit of what the team's capable of, even if it wasn't a fantastic performance to get into pretty crap five losses on the bounce Exeter side.
So a bit more chat on Paul Warren in just a second, but a cracking little interview over on the SBW Patreon this month, where we had a really revealing, candid and refreshing sit-down interview with Mark O'Brien, the Irish centre-back who, of course, played for Derby around 10, 12, 13 years ago, but had to retire from football aged 27 after being diagnosed with a life-threatening heart condition. Really good chat of OB, a really popular character still with fans at the club. And here he is telling myself and Tom his message to anyone like him facing major challenges in their life that they think they cannot overcome.
I think the only advice that I've ever thought about giving to people, and I can only judge it off how I dealt with things, is you just don't give up. I think if you think speaking out is weak and you think giving in and asking for help is weak, it's the complete opposite. It's the strongest thing you can do. So I think it's the fact of you don't give up on your situation, no matter what it makes you feel and no matter how you feel about it. It's about tell a friend, tell a stranger, talk to somebody and offer saying that you are struggling. And I think when you do that and you seek that out, that's your first step of not giving up. And you just You tire out every last little bit of avenue that you may find yourself in. And I've always said that for myself through injuries that I've had, through the life situations that I've had. I've always given myself the reason of saying, okay, just one more day. Because one more day might be that day that everything just changes, that everything gets better. And that one more day might just be, well, do you know what? I don't want to sit and regret. So I'm going to give it that one more day. And maybe tomorrow things could get better. And it's about it. Just appreciate the small things. Like it, when you start appreciating the small things, because I've had to strip my whole life back. And my small things to appreciate is the fact that I got up in the morning, the fact that I'm actually awake, the fact that I can still be involved in football. All of them little small things that I used to overlook make my days so much better.
So hear that one in full on the SBW Patreon membership service. Just the price of a cheapish coffee per month, or possibly an overpriced pint. And you can get that one by signing up over at patreon.com/Steve Bloomer's Washing.
Hi, I'm Nathaniel Mendes-Lang, and you're listening to Steve Bloomer's Washing.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Jewelry isn't a gift you give just once. It's a way to remind your loved one of a beautiful moment every time they see it. Blue Nile can help you find the gift that says how you feel and says it beautifully, with expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com and experience the convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com to find the perfect jewelry gift for any occasion. BlueNile.com.
Russell checking what's on in the box. It's a lovely ball. Dawkins, 5! What an impudent finish from the Jamaican international. Backheeled it in. It's raining goals on the banks of the Thames.
So welcome back to Steve Bloomer's Washing. One that had to run past you both because we haven't podded since the Shrewsbury game. We're not going to dwell on that one. Awful game, awful results. Those full-time scenes, you don't see that sort of thing every day, do you, Anton? Conor Hourihan, I don't want to say confronting, but having a passionate discussion with some fans at the front of the away end following that 1-0 reverse. There's an interesting poll put out by one of our patrons, Jimmy McLaughlin, about who where fans stood in it, whether they thought Hourihan and fans had the right to do what they did, whether just Hourihan did and the fans were in the wrong, or both were in the wrong, or just the fans were in the right. I think most people tended to think that both the fans and Hourihan had every right to do what they did, to voice their opinions and to give a bit back. I guess on the one hand, Anton, it's good to see Hourihan fronting up effectively, showing that this team cares, that he cares. He's not going through the motions that was accused of him, you know, with his sort of part-time role at Villa, and he's not at the peak of his career anymore. But on the other hand, like, nothing ever really comes good of the of doing this sort of thing, does it? Of trying to have a rational debate with fans in the away end after a 1-0 defeat. What was your initial reaction when you saw those pictures and footage?
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly not a great look all round, is it? I can understand both sides of the coin, really. I mean, fans who pay to go and watch the club have every right to voice their opinion. They pay him good money and they expect to see good performances. Where I don't like to see it is where it gets personal and aggressive, which I think it did slightly cross the line on Saturday. Emotions were high. It was at the final whistle, so it's understandable. From Hourihan's perspective, it's commendable in a way. He's kind of standing up as the captain to try and just answer some of the questions of the fans. But as you say, nothing ever really comes good of those situations when the emotions are so high. It's never going to end well, really. So whether that's the best approach or whether actually facing up to it in an interview or kind of a couple of days later with fans might have been the best approach. It's, as I say, it's not a good look, and it was pretty toxic, and at the time it looked pretty bleak for Paul Warne and how he could kind of win fans back, because once you get away fans particularly on your back, it's a long way back from there. But all you can do from the players and the staff's perspective is to work on things on the pitch. If we start winning games, start playing better football, then we'll soon get the fans back, and we know how good our fans can be and how much we back the side, especially away from home, but at Pride Park as well. So if we get the fans on side, then hopefully the results will come off the back of it.
Coach, I did notice that the club did put Harrahan up in the pre-Exeter presser, although he is captain, to be fair. So it's just coincidence, and I'm putting two together on that one. But I mean, what do you make of Paul Warne's demeanour generally? I mean, he has snapped at Dom, not snapped at, he's had a bit of a raised eyebrow at Dom Dietrich a couple of times and prickled slightly at one or two questions. I mean, at Shrewsbury, he didn't really seem to have the demeanour of someone who was particularly owning the bad running form. The interviews since, he was at pains to say he understands why we find it frustrating. Again, being very honest, but not really offering any huge answers or solutions or methods in which he's going to try and turn it around. How do you think he's reacting to this sort of mini crisis in form at the moment?
I think it's hard to tell, isn't it? Because it is for any player or manager, it's so emotional after the full-time whistle to go out in front of media and answer questions, some of which you may not agree with, although, you know, it's not his right to agree or to disagree with questions that he's asked by the media. He just got to answer them. I don't know. I think he is probably struggling with the size of the club and the size of the task. And I imagine that inside the dressing room and behind closed doors, I imagine he is disappointed with the performance. Well, he's certainly disappointed with the results, and I'm sure he should be disappointed with the performances, because it's not like there's been loads of games we should have won and we've just gone the wrong side of the, you know, got the rubber of the green, or we've had loads of terrible refereeing decisions. There have been loads of terrible refereeing decisions. That's what we're in. We're in League One, and there's bad decisions on both sides. But I think what's frustrated fans in his demeanour or the way he's acted is he kind of has tried to kind of paper over the cracks in his interviews. He hasn't, you know, said that it's not good enough, the performance should be better. But maybe that's his management style. Maybe he's not the kind of manager to go out and ball his team out in front of the fans, in front of the media. And maybe he's saying more behind closed doors. We just don't know. But I do think he has been more irritable. As I said earlier in the pod, I do think he has obviously been very much aware, reading, hearing kind of fans' complaints and fan sentiments. Whether that or not that has any impact on his own selection, his own tactics. I mean, my opinion should be, it shouldn't have any impact, right? He should know what he wants to do and know what the team's not doing and correct it himself. Yeah, I think tonight was really important to get that win, just to kind of maybe ease things off a bit, and he can concentrate on hopefully putting together a team to put out another good performance and another good result on Saturday against a team which obviously has been ahead of us all season. So it'll be interesting to see what his demeanour is like post Stevenage if it was to go well either way.
I want to run my overall prediction past you, because I posted this after the Shrewsbury game, just what I think will happen. Posting it here at the moment, so it could be complete nonsense. But I just feel, again, I can't see Clowes pulling the trigger anytime soon, no matter how bad it gets. And I don't think it will get hugely worse than what it is now. I think it will give Warne another window. I know Paul Warne didn't really do enough in the last January window, maybe partly because he should have done more, maybe because he couldn't do more. I think one of Bird or Cashin will go in January. Cashin obviously very close to going to Brighton. They had, was it three or four bids turned down? Bird was linked with Hull. I mean, Cashin's like an international defender playing for a mid-table League One team. That just can't carry on happening forever. So I'd be amazed if we keep both of them. That will free up some funds. I don't know how much that is linked to us then having the opportunity to pay Warne off they're probably not really connected, really, are they? I'm sure it's not as simple as that. But I think we'll end up maybe finishing probably outside the playoffs again. I don't know. Maybe this result was maybe a bit more optimistic, beating Exeter, but it doesn't quite look like right now we've got enough to challenge for the top six, unless the playing style improves or we get a bit more reinforcements in Jan. So I think we finish somewhere between 7th and 10th. And I think then I reckon Klaus will pull the trigger in the summer. I know that we said in the first half that Klaus has apparently told a fan outside Pride Park tonight that he's a long-term appointment, but he was bound to say that. So that's what I think will happen. I know it's really early to say because we are still in late October, but how have the last few weeks shaped Warne's future, Kutch, do you think? And what's your hunch on whether he'll last the season or not?
It's impossible to say, Chris, because if he loses the next five games, he probably doesn't make it to January. And if he wins the next five games, then that's great. And then we'll see how the rest of the season goes. I mean, I think if we do finish outside the playoffs, he should be and would be gone. If we finish outside the playoffs this season. And I imagine if it's looking very likely that we're going to finish outside the playoffs, you know, before the end of the season, then maybe we'll go a little bit earlier even. Because I know you said it probably can't get much worse than it is now. However, if it continues at this rate and we stay in 9th, 10th position and increasingly aren't threatening the playoffs, then that is worse, right? Because he's had more time and it hasn't got better. So if it stays as it is now, that is getting worse, in my opinion. There's got to actually be improvement in results and in performances and in the league position for him to turn things around. And I think there's a good chance there will be. Like, I'm not writing him off. I think I've kind of edged more towards the kind of he probably isn't the right man camp in the last few weeks. However, that's not an entrenched position that I have. You know, for me, it's a fluid situation. He goes in a run, he wins the next 2, 3, 4 games and you take it from there and you suddenly think, okay, we can get some momentum. As I said, the squad's good enough to get top six at least. You know, I'm not saying we deserve to be fourth or anything, but there have been a couple of games. You hold on an extra couple of minutes against Pompey and you get 3 points against them. You know, that team should have beat Cheltenham, obviously, straight after beating Blackpool. Those two results, and you are, I think, in fifth or fourth place. So the team, it's not a million miles away, even though we've been shit, right? So I do think it's easily turnaroundable, but it's got to happen soon.
I tend to agree with Kutch rather than you, Chris, around the quality of the squad. I do think it's good enough to be top six and it potentially even top two with under the right management. But going back to your prediction, Chris, I think if that comes true with one of Bird or Cashin leaving or even both, I'm really intrigued to see what happens with recruitment because I was a bit baffled, to be honest, with the recruitment, certainly in the second half of the window in the summer, because I was really excited about the appointment of Mark Thomas from Oxford. He did some brilliant stuff at Oxford in kind of bringing through players from lower leagues and from the likes of Scotland and Ireland into that team, which I think is exactly what we were crying out for at the right age profile. But we didn't seem to do that. And I'm not sure where that came from, whether that was a direction from Warne and his staff or whether it's just a slightly different approach from Mark Thomas at a different club. But I'd really like to go down that route if we do get a bit of money. Because I think that's the best way to get out of this division. And if we were to build a squad like that, I think we can really challenge in the second half of the season or certainly going into next season.
I think on that point, Chris, and this kind of ties into one of my main concerns about Paul Warne longer term, is he's not a coach. He's a manager. He's not the kind of player that is on the training ground working directly one-on-one with players and improving players. And I don't even think that the other coaching staff are. I think they have a style of play which they want to implement and they think is the formula to get promoted. But it's not about improving. Paul Warne may well disagree with this and find this an offensive thing for me to say, but I think he's not about improving individual players. And I think if you go down the Mark Thomas route, which I would also like to see of kind of being having a good scouting network, picking up kind of undervalued players in lower leagues, leagues around the UK, and improving them, I think you need to have a coach who's able to improve players. I don't think that's what Paul Warren and his team are there to do. I think they're purely there to put in a formula of play which they believe is the right formula to get promoted. And my concern about that is that might have been the right formula three years ago, two years ago. But the teams that get promoted from League One more recently are playing good football, and they're playing a more progressive style of football. And I wonder if Paul Warren is an appointment which was 2 years too late.
It's hard to say on that front, though, isn't it? Because Paul, we've only got one other job to judge Paul Warren on, and that was at a Rotherham team who were punching above their weight with a very low budget, a much smaller club than Derby are. So that was the style of play which worked for Rotherham with the squad that he had at his disposal. He's coming into a completely different job. And I think sometimes it's easy to shoehorn managers into one particular style, but the best managers are ones who can adapt. I'm not saying we've seen that from Paul Warren yet, but there's still time for him to adapt to a different type of club, a different type of recruitment. And I think you have to give him a bit of a chance with a couple of windows to bring in his own players. I know he's had the summer, which didn't quite go according to plan, but with a little bit of a budget to spend and bringing players through, you never know what can happen. So I wouldn't write him off just yet.
Come on then, let's have it before we go. I know you've just given some very nuanced insight into Paul Warren, but in or out, let's do it. Look, personally, I'll go first. I'm still in. I know it's not going to be a popular answer with a lot of fans, but I'm just still clinging on to, with the barest parts of my fingertips, the Paul Warren that managed the 15-game unbeaten run in the league, the Paul Warren whose Derby team have gone to difficult places this season and won comfortably and scored lots of goals doing it, the Paul Warren who has got a team out of this division three times. I know, even with a formula, as you just said, Kutch, that maybe isn't one that can work right now. Anton, are you Paul Warren in or Paul Warren out?
I'm still just about in, I think. I still believe it can be turned around, to agreeing with a lot of the points you made, to be honest. And it's important to think about who would come in to replace him as well. I mean, there have been a lot of names banded around on socials this week, the likes of Eustace and Chris Wilder and Warnock. I don't know whether those managers would come down to League One, to be honest, especially John Eustace is the standout candidate, but he's going to have Championship clubs all over him given the job that he did at Birmingham. So I don't think we'd be able to lure him down to League One. So I'm not sure who else we'd go for at the moment. If things take a turn and don't improve over the next few weeks and months, then yeah, we will have to make a change, but for now, just about in.
Kutch, I mean, the big question is, whenever this happens, a few the same names get trotted out. So if Warren leaves, could Igor Stimac lead a team to League One promotion by doing it on a cold Wednesday night in Leighton Orient?
Possibly, but it wouldn't be my choice.
Time he gets mentioned, and it's never going to happen, is it? It's ridiculous.
No, it's not. I don't know what is he playing a progressive style of football in India or wherever he is now?
No,
I don't
idea.
Know. Like,
absolutely no idea.
I think to answer your question though, Chris, as I said, I am not in an entrenched position on this. But as I said, I am closer to out than in. So if you were to force me into a extreme, I would say worn out. I wouldn't be sacking him tomorrow morning. But I've lost a little bit of patience, I think. And tonight, yeah, hopefully could be the start of turning it around. But yeah, probably more on the worn out side. I take Anton's point about needing to know who comes in. In some ways, I'd like, if we were to change our manager, which I don't expect we will, I'd like it to be someone I've never heard of, and it to be someone who's been well-researched and is an up-and-coming coach we don't know about because we're not actually that well-informed. And they've got no connection to Derby County, and they've been appointed because they are actually an innovative, forward-thinking football coach. That would be my choice, but I don't know who that person is. So we'll stick with Paul Warren for now.
A lot of ifs and buts to come before we get to that point. So the first one being Stevenage away on Saturday. I'll be there. Really looking forward to that one. A repeat visit, Kutch, of the hottest day of the year when I watched your face almost melt off in a McDonald's off an A-road in Stevenage before the game. It'll probably be about what? Maybe about 35 degrees colder than when I last went.
Yeah.
So that's exciting.
Yes. I mean, I imagine 5 degrees would be preferable to 40 degrees.
just about.
I imagine it'd be warmer than 5 degrees, though. So mate, you might be all right. I think it'd be good. I'm gutted not to be joining you, Chris, in Stevenage, because it was a lovely part of the world from what I remember, and enjoyed a McDonald's.
It was. Anton, thanks for joining, man.
Yeah, cheers, Chris.
And Kutch, let's go again. When we speak again in a few weeks' time, all will be rosy again. Let's keep the faith, eh?
Take care.